Welcome to Raw and Real Entrepreneurship, the show that dares to bring the no-nonsense insight to those who have the courage to start, grow, and scale a business. Here is your host, entrepreneur, investor, and best-selling author, Susan Sly.
Hey, what is up, Raw and Real Entrepreneurs, wherever you are in the world? I hope you're having an amazing day. And we're going to have a really incredible entrepreneur on the show today. And I'm going to tell you something. He is a man of many talents, and you might even hear him rap. If you remember my show with Jesse Itzler, where I challenged Jesse to a rap battle and Jesse didn't rap. He was turning 50 the next day. He's like, I'm just not going to rap. And so I am the default winner because I rapped on my own show and Jesse didn't. So I have beat Jesse in a rap battle. Just Jesse throwing that out there. But I would lose this rap battle because anyway, that's another story. But check it out. My guest today is a modernist American furniture designer, and his furniture is spectacular. And he's the founder of the wildly popular DTC sofa brand and Beach Made Modern. He was a high school dropout turned graffiti artist turned serial entrepreneur. He got his start in the furniture industry because of need. He was young and broke, and his first apartment didn't have any furniture. Thus, he taught himself how to build some. After starting several of his own companies, including modular dwellings, a prefab backyard shelter company, he sharpened his skills in the corporate world at Pottery Barn and Restoration Hardware, where I have spent a significant amount of money. Between that, American Girl, and Lego, like, I'm serious, there's a lot of money right there. If I had just invested that in Apple, you know, that's a different story. Anyway, he saw customers accustomed to waiting 3 months and more for sofas and sectionals that realistically only take a few weeks to make. He wanted to change that, and he wanted to disrupt. So my guest today, straight from the Bay Area of the USA, is Edgar Blazona. Edgar, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this one. I didn't know I was going to be doing a rap battle, so I might have to sharpen up my ninth grade skills. But as a graffiti artist growing up, you know, kind of goes hand in hand. You kind of have to have a little rap skills. You know, my wife would say, oh my God, I could just hear her cringing right now. Like, please don't let him start rapping. However, if we did have a battle, I probably would win.
You 100% would win because you wrote your own rap songs, and I'm just going to recycle 80s rap songs because that's just the only rap songs I know. Maybe some 90s we could see, but anyway, we'll leave it. Friends, stay tuned because Edgar may rap by the end of the show. We don't know, but
maybe.
Yeah, and professional stalker, we're going to talk about that in a moment. But Edgar, let me ask you this. So as a serial entrepreneur, what was the first business you ever started? Like as a kid even?
Yeah. The watermelon man, get your ice cold watermelon man. Hey, watermelon man, get your ice cold watermelon man. I would push this cart around on my skateboard, and it was filled with ice, and I would sell slices of watermelon. I didn't feel like lemonade really. I mean, as weird as this sounds, and you know, no one taught me this, but you go back and you think, I just couldn't make enough money on lemonade, right? And so I'd get this watermelon, and I'd slice it up, and I'd bag it, and you know, into little wedges, and I'd put it on ice, and I'd roll it around, and I think I'd charge, you know, 50 cents a slice, something like that. But it felt like it made a lot more money than the lemonade stand did. And for some reason, I would crush it. You know, I'd roll up to a construction site and I'd sell all the watermelon, you know, pre-sliced, and go back and get another one. And so, but I still remember that jingle, you know, watermelon man, get your ice cold watermelon.
So do you think there is going to be like a watermelon themed, you know, sectional?
Well,
I could see it. I could see it.
Yeah. Thank gosh we don't make our own, you know, fabrics, watermelon fabrics. Although I could take that challenge. You know, it seems like you're kind of into challenging things. So I could probably ship you one.
We just had this visual though of a sectional, like, modern sectional watermelon slices, and I see, like, you know, Northwest, you know, Kim Kardashian's daughter or something, like, gets photographed for AD with this watermelon section. I'm just saying, that's, if that happens, like, kudos to you.
I'll cut you in on the deal.
Yeah, excellent. I love it. So now that, you know, for the show, I've interviewed hundreds of entrepreneurs, and like you, I'm a serial entrepreneur. I'm curious your take on this. Do you think entrepreneurs are born or can they be made?
I think they're totally born. I actually think there's, it's funny you bring this up. We're talking about people who are doers, people who are followers, people who are helpers, right? You need all of those people, right? Put together. Not everyone wants to be an entrepreneur. Not everyone wants to be a leader. Not everyone wants to be an idea person, you know, and some people are just ideas people, and they can't even get it off, you know, get it going. Right. But you need all of those people to create the society or create the project or whatever it is. So the short answer is no, I don't think that everyone could be an entrepreneur. I do think you're kind of bred that, you know, maybe it comes from your upbringing. Maybe it comes from something inner within you that is just driving to be a little different. Cause man, it's hard and it's scary, you know, and you bet the farm every time, you know. I don't have a, you know, 401k to fall back on or that I'm slowly growing over the years. It's like, no, I'm all in again. You know, here we go again, all in. And it can be very scary. And as you get older, of course, you have more bills, you have more, you know, stuff, you have more this machine that you got to feed. And so it makes it riskier and riskier as you go.
It's interesting that you say that about the born piece, because I don't ever remember thinking I want to work for someone else. Like I don't ever recall that. I saw it as a means to an end. Like I'll do this job working for someone else, so I have enough money to start my own thing, right? Yeah. But I don't recall ever going, oh, I want to work for a company. And I think I'm just wired differently. So I love that you said that. When, in terms of like your company now, when people think of starting any company, they're like, I've got to find money to start this. So when you initially started the company, like how did you get your first prototype going? Where did you get the money for it?
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. You know, in the furniture world, it's a tough play, right? I grew up in the Bay Area, right? I've seen this, you know, gold rush, frankly, come through multiple times, come and go and crash and all that. And I think that, you know, being in the furniture business, I've kind of like watched it go, you know, oh, there goes all my friends, you know, getting new cars and, you know, pool tables at their office and, you know, all this stuff. And I was never able to be a part of that. And it wasn't until, I don't know, 2010, something like that, where it started to make sense to be able to get money to do my passion, which is furniture. And like you said, I dropped out of high school and got an apartment and didn't have enough money to have furniture. So I made my own and, you know, all of those things and was hustling on the street corner, selling that stuff, like, you know, right on the sidewalk out in front of the bar, you know, and I was, you know, and so this is my passion. This is my life. Like, this is what I do. And so how can I push it into a direction to build it? And, you know, I started out with a small little cabinet shop and, you know, had a saw and I realized, man, it's going to be forever till I get a summer house. I'm pushing wood through a saw the rest of my life, you know, and I got that job at Pottery Barn to learn mass, you know, and then once I kind of learned mass, like, well, how do I raise money for this? And so I started a small brand, True Modern. It was a wholesale brand and I needed to raise like real capital. And so I started listening to podcasts, weirdly enough. And there was this guy out here in the Bay Area called Jason Calacanis. And, you know, he's got this Week in Startups podcast. And he's kind of a Bay Area, kind of a, you know, in the startup world, he's kind of a Bay Area dude. Like he's one of the dudes that, you know, everyone knows him. And he has this podcast and he would tell you, you know, really over years, tell you how to raise money and tell you what he likes and what his friends like and what his friends don't like and how to do it in a way. And so my son and I, we would drive to school every day. I would drop him off and it was like an hour. We would sit in the car and I would take notes. And I would listen to his words. I would year after year of these podcasts and I would, you know, all listen to in a couple months. But I would take notes on this stuff and I would find a way to pitch to him and get his, you know, investment. And I really did that. And, you know, one of the things he would say is, you know, give to get, you know, basically like, don't just, hey, can I have your money? You know, can I, you know, and so I had this, he belonged to this fancy club. And I was like, okay, I need to get into the fancy club. So I figured out a way to get in a fancy club. And suddenly I'm a member of this club. You know, I'm the cool artist guy that they want because they want to be diverse, you know? So I played into that. And so, nice. And there he was sitting over there, you know? And so I would go there every day and I would build this business. I was writing this business model and kind of figuring out what to do and designing the furniture and designing the space and the factory. I had to build a small factory. And so then I started building this little tiny factory because I had to prove to the world that I could do what I set out to do, which was really making sofas in less than 24 hours, like custom sofas in 24 hours. Now that's crazy, you know, no one does that. No one's heard of that. Turns out it's a bad business model, by the way, but I'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, so there he is sitting over there and I had written this email and it said, you know, hey, Jason, you know, you have these fancy conferences. However, all these famous people are sitting in rental furniture. I happen to make great furniture. How about I provide you the stage furniture for your conference in exchange to be able to go to your conference?
That's genius.
That's a big gift. A guy walked in and said, hey, you know, are you Jason Calacanis? You look like Jason. And I'm like, no, but he's sitting over there. And I was like, ha ha. And I had had this email queued up probably for a month or two, but I was waiting for the right moment to be able to send it to him. And I relayed that story to him. And within 10 minutes, I saw him right at the table sending me an email back saying, I'd love to talk to you. And that really was the start to getting his investment.
So there's a lot to unpack there, Edgar. So it's the creativity, which is huge as an entrepreneur. It's the creative networking, like, and you know, how do I gain access? Proximity is power. When people are in positions, whether it's through wealth or status, that they're oftentimes, and I've found even for myself, when I'm doing events and, you know, people lining up wanting autographs or book signings and things like that. But when I'm just with my crew and by myself or in my element, I'm a lot more relaxed. I'm a lot more open, right? So that proximity piece is key. And then figuring out how to add value to someone without an expectation. Of course, there's an expectation like, hey, I want to do business or there's something I want to get to know, but where is there a potential need? How can I help that person in a certain way? And then, you know, open that door. So he puts your furniture on stage at the conference. Like, tell me about that.
So then he puts my furniture on stage. You know, and that was kind of cool. I forget the guy's name, the founder of Box.com. You know, he's sitting in my furniture. He's another kind of famous guy, you know, and I'm taking pictures and I'm thinking, wow, look at that, you know. And I had kind of just left it at that. And I actually, you know, it was kind of expensive for me to do. And, you know, another month went by and I was just kind of laying low. And he calls me and says, hey, I want you to come in. And, you know, we've got this other conference coming up and, you know, I'd like to talk to you about it. And in all honesty, I was kind of going there to break up because I kind of felt like, you know what, I can't do another one of these conferences. It was like, it was a lot of work. I didn't have the success. I better find another way. And he said to me, hey man, how's that business going you're working on, you know, why don't you show me? And I said, well, you know, okay. And so he had always told us, you know, have an iPhone, have an iPad, like always have multiple devices in case one of them is out of battery or whatever. And man, he's asking me these questions. And I'm looking at my iPad. It might as well have been Japanese. I had no idea where the deck was. I had no idea. Like I was so nervous. Like here's my big moment. You know, he wants to see my pitch, you know? And, And I said to him, I said, well, he said, I might like to invest. And I said, well, I got to ask another guy who just kind of committed to investing. And he said, who is it? And I said, well, it was the owner of this place called The Battery, the social club that I belonged to. I was working all the angles, you know?
Sure.
And he said, oh, Michael? He goes, oh, how about Michael and I just split the realm? And Michael hadn't, you know, like even committed for very much. And I was like, oh God, you know, now I got to go back to Michael. I said, I don't know, man. I would have to ask Michael first, you know, that put him on ice just like that, you know? And so I went back to Michael and I said, hey, you know, Jason wants to split the round, you know, would you be willing to, I'm not trying to upsell you, Michael, but I'm just saying that this is what happened. And sure enough, they split the round and I was off to the races.
So are you able to disclose how much that early round was?
I don't want to. It wasn't that much money, but it was enough to get me going. I had to go do his festival, the launch festival. You know, I had to be up on stage and pitch like everyone else. That was kind of part of the deal. Like, well, if we're going to do this, you got to do this festival for me. And I was the only furniture guy there, you know, and I'm up against like AI companies and, you know, the Ring thing and, you know, all the money companies and, you know, all this stuff. And I'm the furniture dude, but I'm winning. I won all my rounds. I didn't win the event, but I won all my rounds. And I thought there, it was like, wow, this is something fresh, you know, and exciting. And I had this robotic arm thing that was, I was basically building like a sofa vending machine. In fact, if you Google Benchmade Modern Robot YouTube, you can find this early things of this robotic vending machine that I was building. And it was fun times. It was exciting.
I'm so Googling that. I want to talk about pitch rounds for a minute, because there are friends of mine are, they are working on a startup and they've done a couple of pitches. I have a incubator for women-led, women-founded startups called FemBoss. And so it's daunting for them. And it is daunting. Like it is like, there's so much that goes into it. What advice can you give to someone? Because I know their names are Janie and Shannon. They're listening to this. What advice would you give to them getting ready for the pitch round?
Well, Jamie and Shannon, here's the best advice that I can give you. The best advice I can give you is while you think your pitch is dope, right? You got the best pitch. You got it all together. You know, it's not. And it's not going to be until, you know, 6 months in, right? So the advice is this: start with your C-list investors, the people who make the least amount of sense, the people who you don't even really want, but you know you got to pitch to. Start with them first. And the reason is because you learn so much in those early pitches. If you're reading the room, you're reading their face, you're answering their questions, you know, some of them aren't even listening to you, like whatever it is. You learn how to adapt your pitch based on those intuitions, right? And mm-hmm. and the questions and all that. So if you've burned, let's say you're the investor you want is Andreessen Horowitz, right? Like, don't go to Andreessen first, right? Because you basically burn that opportunity, you know, pretty much forever. So start in the back, fine tune your stuff. And by the time you get to Andreessen, you know, maybe you've got some money on the table, but more importantly, you'll have the best pitch you've ever had because you're most experienced along the way.
I love that. What great advice. And it's so it's kind of like you said, you know, 6 months down the road, the better you get, you tighten up the pitch, you learn to GTTP, get to the point. When we first started pitching for Radius, it was so funny because I look at the PowerPoint now, Edgar, and I laugh. And there's a whole joke in AI, like, oh, if you have a PowerPoint, it's real AI now, you know, like, oh, I'm all grown up now. I have a PowerPoint. So I look at it now and I laugh, but we started to get better. And then we would invite investors to a virtual pitch room. And it was like, you know, just acknowledging them, and they were friends. So I won't disclose the most money we raised in 45 minutes, but it was legit. Let's put it that way. And the way I look at pitching is you need to go in so clear on what your real value is, your, what you're bringing to the table. Because if you're not confident, the investors aren't confident either. And there's a difference between arrogance and confidence. And totally. That's the key. And even when Radius hasn't needed to do an A round, because we've been at revenue, but we will do an A round. And I was on the, I have a regular cadence with this VC, and he's like, well, how much are you going to raise? And I told him, he said, what are you going to do with the money? And I said, well, it's going to be this, this, and this. And he's like, oh, okay. And I said, and by the way, we're on several M&A lists, and I have regular cadence calls with several of your peers. You're at the top of our list, and here's why. I'll talk to you next month. But it's this, you don't want to think about it like getting married. It's more like dating, and you want to let people know. Like, the more attractive it is when you're dating, you know, other people, right? So to use that analogy, I haven't had enough caffeine, Edgar. That was not the greatest analogy, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I do know what you mean. And there's a moment where arrogance and cocky does not work, right? Because I should step back and I should say, there's something about arrogance that could work, but it oftentimes doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. There's a few people that can get away with it and make it work. But you turn a lot of people off, I think. There's something about confidence. There's something about, a feeling of I've already won, or I've got these things in place. They're legit. They're real. I can back it up. And I can win, right? And you know, it goes back to the rap battle thing. You know, you caved in incredibly quick on the rap battle, because all I had to do was tell you that I got my own raps and that I had gotten kicked out of school writing those raps. That was it. But that came from the heart, right? That was legit. And
he got kicked out of Sunday school. Let's tell the whole story, because it's Rod Real Entrepreneurship. He got kicked out of Sunday school.
I got kicked out of religion class in high school. Writing the most like nasty rap you could think of back in those days when it was that sort of thing.
Well, and now everyone's like, oh, Susan, you have to rap, right? So we'll talk about that in just a moment. But let me going back to, it's like this. There's a French saying, Edgar, je ne sais quoi, that like there's a little something, something there. And it's like, it's like, I'm going here with or without you, but I'd rather go with you. And that confidence. So for your company, what is the future? What is your growth plan?
Well, what is my growth plan? I mean, we're in an interesting position, right? So I started out to disrupt the furniture industry, right? There's this old world group of furniture guys in North Carolina and around the country that are kind of running the show, right? And, a lot of them just found the internet not too long ago, you know? And so I set out to disrupt. Well, then I got acquired by the companies that I wanted to disrupt, right? So now, now what do I do, right? Now I'm kind of like, I'm trying to change the ways, but man, you know, one of the things the CEO said to me is, I know we bought the disruptor, but you sure are disruptive. I am. And so, our future, has changed multiple times now. And what are we trying to do? We run a direct to consumer, a DTC, right? We sell directly to the consumer. And we're trying to make that model work, and it's tough. It's not easy. I'm owned by one of the biggest factories in the country, and it's still very, very difficult to do. And if I'm going to be totally honest, it's not so easy shipping furniture sectionals across the country on a onesie basis. It's very, very, very challenging. And so, we're still fine tuning the model. In the meantime, we make some really nice stuff. Frankly, we make the best online sofas. And I can stand tall on that. And we make really, really good furniture. It's not cheap, but we make really, really good stuff.
So I've had several guests who've become good friends who've been acquired. And I want to hear that story. Did the offer come out of left field, or was it you were like kind of courting this relationship? How did that happen?
Well, how did it happen? What can I share? Okay. So I went to Restoration Hardware for a quick minute. I was sort of courted by Gary Friedman of Restoration Hardware. And, you know, we were sort of struggling. I was raising more money, and I went to him, and he said, well, you know, I don't want to buy the company, but I'd like to buy you. And he made me an incredible offer. And so I went there for a couple of years. I actually secretly kept the company running in the background, and my old, you know, benchmate, while I went there, and, you know, and it actually started to do better, and we didn't necessarily need to raise. And lo and behold, I ended up selling the company to one of Restoration Hardware's vendors. And now I'm, you know, running my own company, you know, for one of their vendors. And, you know, it was a tough time. You know, I was on the ropes like most startups do, you know, and I was pushed and pulled and, you know, spending money out of my own pocket and trying to keep the thing running. And, you know, that Restoration Hardware thing was a savior, really. And it allowed me, it gave me enough time to kind of, you know, even get paid, you know, not worry about bills and not have the same conversations with my family and all of that. It gave me just a moment to relax a bit and take a deep breath and refocus the company. And it was a great time. It was really helpful, frankly. I needed it at that point.
And thank you for being so transparent, because there's this, for those who are not in the startup world, there's a friend of mine said to me, she's like, how does it feel to be making real money? And I'm like, I'm a startup CEO. Like, I don't think you know yet. Like, it's not like I'm Sheryl Sandberg who just left Meta with, you know, a net worth of $1.4 billion. Like, I'm a startup CEO, which means, you know, some of the dinners come out of my own pocket. Some of the travel comes out of my own pocket. Like, you just don't get into this unless you're willing to commit. Yeah. And I love that you said that, because that relief, and I'm sure that translated into your marriage, that translated into how you slept at night. And some acquisitions, like even when Amazon acquired Zappos, Tony still had, God rest his soul, he still had the austerity to kind of go and disrupt and create and do all that stuff. And sometimes it can go well, sometimes it doesn't go well. And we see companies that kind of back out of that, you know, acquisition phase. But what has been for you something you didn't expect on this journey that you would say, if there was a book on your life, you would look back and say, I dedicate a whole chapter to that lesson?
Gosh, you know, I don't know. I think that, you know, I don't know if this actually answers the question, but I'm going to tell you the first word that came to my mind was resilience, right? Mm. And when you were, you know, I have incredible confidence in myself, right? I, you know, in fact, I still have that table saw that I was pushing the wood through. I keep that saw because I have this thing in the back of my head that if it all fails, I can always pull that saw out and make some kitchen cabinets for some people. And I keep that saw. I keep that saw because I know as long as I have power, you know, I don't even really need a place, a garage. I don't even need that, you know, a driveway. Like, I could start from the ground up if I had that saw. And there's something, that resilience, right? And you know, going back to what your friend said about, wow, you must be making the real money. Well, first of all, to your friend, there's a cap. There's like salary caps in the startup world. You can't just, you know, make whatever salary you want, because people won't invest in you. People will think you're too greedy. And so there is a CEO number, and it, you know, it varies a bit, depends on where you live and all that, but you, it's not easy street, right? It's not, I'm in the money now street. So I think that when you come from a place when you're self-employed, right? And you have to keep the lights on. It's that resilience that plays. And I remember back when I was, you know, I left the house when I was 16. I had a car when I was 15. My parents didn't know about it for a year. I parked it up the street. I would drive every day. I had no license, you know, and I finally left at 16. And you know, and then I started making my own, you know, being self-employed. And I bought a Vanagon, a Volkswagen Vanagon, an old one, you know, not even a new one. Like, I'm talking like an old love bug style Vanagon. And I thought, if it all fails, I can live in this van again, right? I could always just live in this van. And then as I got a little older, I bought another van again, like a nicer one. Like, same thing, same mentality. Then I built this prefab house, right? And I could always live in this prefab house. Then I bought a commercial lot. I could park that on there and I could live. So all this whole time I'm thinking, you know, if it fails, like, what's my backup plan? I think you always have to have some sort of a backup plan. You know, there's some entrepreneurs that say no backup plan, you know, head first, 100%.
Burn the boats, right? Yeah.
Yeah, just, but I don't believe in that because I think, you know, everything is a little bit more fragile than that, you know? And so if you have some backup plans, and for me, it was just a mindset of a little bit of stability, right? That van again, that prefab house. If I have just a little bit of stability, that would allow me to bet the farm again and again, you know? And so,
yeah.
So that a way long answer to your question, but that's really, I think what the first thing that comes to my mind is resilience. And along with that resilience is kind of having a backup plan.
That answer was beautiful. It was powerful. I mean, the first thought for me is actually because our podcast producer, her retirement dream is a Vanagon. So the question I have for you is, what was the original color? Because she's going to say, why didn't you
orange.
Ask him the color?
Orange.
And the next one?
Brown. Yeah. And you know what? I'll tell you a funny story. You're going to love this. I convinced my, at the time, girlfriend to get in that brown van again and travel the country for 2 months writing a book called Touring the Nation on 18 Holes of Miniature Golf. No joke. I interviewed Snack Bar. I would take photos. What's your best-selling product at your snack bar? You know, turns out it's the nachos. Yeah. So for 2 months, I traveled around the country writing a book on miniature golf in that Vanagon.
Wow. So there you go, Tisha. I did ask the question because I knew you were going to ask that. So her dream one is green. And so, but she also loves orange. And then she wants to have like these, like a bunch of pugs. And she's like, I'm out of here. When my kids are out of the house, I'm in my van again with my pugs and I'm good. So Tish, you got the answer. And so I would have been fired from my own show if I didn't ask the question, Edgar.
That's funny.
So my final question, I guess, is there's so many things I want to ask you, but I know we've had entrepreneurs on here who've been transparent about depression, coming back from that and coming back from financial setbacks. What advice do you want to give to someone who's listening right now, who's an entrepreneur and feeling a little beat up? Maybe they just did a pitch and they didn't get the money, or maybe they're paying their employees on their credit cards. What do you want to say to them?
Yeah. I forget the two people we were talking their names earlier, but I would love to talk to them again. And I would say, you know, it is a long road, right? There are so many ups and downs, right? High, super highs and super lows, right? Mm-hmm. In the same day, like literally the same day, you'll think, oh my God, I am going to be a billionaire. Like we just, you know, just beat everybody and we are the best and I'm the best and I'm rich and money is raining from the ceilings. And then 2 hours later, your phone is getting turned off and, you know, you're getting kicked out and there is no money. And that guy was a fraud. And so there's these incredible highs and these incredible lows. And it takes a real, I want to say training, or like you really have to focus on taking an even line and not being too high and too low, because those highs, no matter how good it feels, but contradicted to those lows, can really create that depression that you mentioned. So if you can kind of start from the beginning with somewhat of a stable, you know, mid level of excitement and disappointment, then I think that you can kind of ride those crazy times and kind of stay out of depression. You know, it's very lonely as a founder, right? It's very, very lonely. You run into multiple situations where you feel like an imposter, right? You don't know anything about whatever you're building or doing. Like, you're learning as you go. You think you do, but in reality, you're trying to build something different. And so, you know, this imposter feeling that we get, you know, and we all get it, right? And if we could just reach out to one another just a little more, just to check in with each other, to actually say, like, I'm having a really hard time with this. Like, I feel like a fraud at times, you know, like I feel like I don't know how to run a company or have 100 employees. Like, I don't know what to do, you know? And if we could open up a little bit of that and actually talk to one another and, you know, be a little bit more honest instead of having these big egos, I feel like we would be much more successful, frankly. So the advice is, don't ride the highs too high. Don't ride the lows too low. And maybe find a good team of people that are like you, that you can truly open up with and you know, kind of have some conversations, some real conversations, not just, oh, we're crushing it, you know, our hockey stick is, you know, better than the rest and all that.
That's incredible wisdom from someone who's clearly lived it. And that's what the show is about. Like, let's not make it look like, oh, it's so easy. And I love what you said earlier about there's a cap on salaries. And in fact, when you're fundraising, you have to disclose what percentage of executives are paid over $100,000 a year, which it's not going to be glamorous. So it was funny when she said that, I'm like, how much do you think I'm making, right? Any money I have is not coming from this. It's coming from past things that I did.
Yeah.
And there is that long period of time. And then you to your point, Edgar, it's that you wake up in the morning, it's like, here we go again, go, go, go. And then something happens and you're excited, and something happens and you're like, oh, I feel like I've been kicked in the gut. And then it's just, and you get up and you do it over and over again until someone buys you, right? It takes a certain kind of, to your point, it's resilience. It takes a certain kind of personality who's able to do that day in and day out. So are you going to rap? That's the question.
I think I'll hold back. I mean, I used to be known as the king of height, right? I was a graffiti artist. I was Blaze, you know, as if you haven't heard, I'm the king of height. You don't want a bottle. You don't want a bite. If you bite that Blaze, you will get ganked. Rolling down the alley in my lowered army tank.
Yes. That was awesome. That was awesome.
My wife would kill me if she was here.
That's okay. I'll just stalk her on social and then I'll share that, just that clip. So Neville, who does the video production. So Neville, we just want that clip of Edgar rapping. No, we're going to put it all over on social media.
You're fired, Neville.
Well, Edgar, I want to thank you for being raw and real. I want to thank you just for like showing up as your authentic self and giving people permission to say, you know what, this is gritty, this is hard. I'm going to keep on going and it isn't going to be glamorous a lot of the time, but eventually if I am resilient, I will get there. So thank you for that. And I want to encourage everyone. You got it. Go to Benchmade Modern. There's no watermelon sofas yet, but you never know when there could be. The wedge.
The wedge. Yeah.
And we already have the theme song jingle for the commercials.
Yeah, totally. So.
Hey, you never know. So wherever you are in the world, Edgar and I would love a 5-star review. And just so you know, we will give you swag. So if I read your review online, we will send you a $25 Amazon gift card, which you can go to benchmademodern.com. You can turn that gift card into cash somewhere and then use that $25 to buy yourself. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway,
absolutely.
We want the 5-star review. Tag us on social and don't forget, once you do the review, email reviews@studentslie.com. Let us know where that review is. And if I read it online, maybe I'll rap read it. I don't know. That could be a new aspect of the show, or we'll have Edgar back and he'll rap read it, that you could get a $25 Amazon gift card. So Edgar, thanks again so much for being here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It was fun kind of reliving some of those stories and rapping.
Yeah, it's all in one. It's so good. All right. Well, everyone, this has been another episode of Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. And God bless. And I will see you in a future episode.
This episode is over. However, there are hundreds of great shows on the Raw and Real Entrepreneurship channel. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a new episode. On behalf of our team, we want to thank you so much for listening to the show. If this episode has helped you in any way, please go ahead and give a great review on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you listen to this podcast. Please tag Susan on social at Susan_Sly at Twitter, Susan Sly on Instagram, and at Susan Sly Live on Facebook. With that, we will see you in a future episode of Raw and Real Entrepreneurship.